This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. The work of the state's Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board has shifted in recent years from not just focusing on prevention alone, but to strengthening families. What might seem like a subtle shift is having an impact. Here to talk about that is the Executive Director of the state's Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board, Rebecca Murray, and CEO of United Healthcare's Wisconsin Community Plan, Kevin Moore. Thank you both for joining us to talk about your partnership and investments.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Rebecca, starting with you, take us back to 1983. Why did the legislature create the board in the first place? What was its original purpose?
Yeah, great question. And we were very fortunate. So the prevention board's been around for just over 40 years. And last year in 2023, we had one of the founding writers of the legislation come to our May quarterly board meeting and talk about why she was the original author.
Who was that?
Jeanette Bell. So she was in her first term as a legislator in 83, and she was approached by a small group of teachers and parents who were really asking for some additional help for parents. So they were seeing an increase in abuse and neglect cases that they were reporting, but also the idea that they weren't sure that it was completely abuse and neglect, and was there something we could do for those families in addition to just reporting them to that county Child Protective Services. So she got bipartisan co-author on the bill, and that whole point was to have a small part of government that wasn't part of the big cabinet agencies, that had all those cabinet agencies together with community members, because we have 10 members that are public members, and then you still have legislators there. So you bring these three pieces together to really think about what do Wisconsin families need. And they really, at the beginning, focused on how do we talk to parents about catching your kids doing good, about positive parenting. Kids want attention. And if you're always giving them attention when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're going to continue to do that to get that parental attention. So really that focus of how do we talk to parents about positive parenting, catching your kids when they're doing good, elevating that good relationship building within those first years.
What a unique part of state government, 40 years old. Kevin, I know United Healthcare, a national company known for administering health plans. Mm-hmm. Can you help us make the connection to how your work relates to child abuse prevention? Why is that important?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in short, it's really about how do we make the health and well-being of our members better tomorrow than they was today? And so when we think about our moms and kiddos, especially those that are at risk, we do a full care management across the board. So we look at risks. We look at, are they going to the doctor? Are they getting their prescriptions that they need? So all of the clinical things that we know that they need in order to have healthy outcomes. But there's a gap there. And for us, what we want to be able to do is really support the family and say, okay, once you have the newborn at home, do you have the supports that are going to make you the best parent you possibly can be? Because we do know that when you have a strong family and a strong parent unit, it does make it easier to make sure that kids are going in for immunizations, that they're going in for follow-up visits, because the hierarchy of needs is such where, you know, there is a solid foundation there. And that's part of the reason why I'm so excited that we are reaching out and partnering with family resource centers, because when we do work with a family, when we do work with a mom and say, okay, what are your needs? What are your struggles? What are you nervous about? If they identify anything from food insecurity or, I need some support in connecting with maybe childcare, we now have resources in the community that are really tailored to the community and saying, look, why don't we connect you with a family resource
center? We'll talk
center.
About yep. that referral process, yep. which is new for you.
Yeah.
Rebecca, you've called child abuse and neglect a major public health problem in Wisconsin. Why do you identify it as a public health issue?
Sure, and I wouldn't say it's just us. The CDC and a lot of other agencies consider child maltreatment a public health issue because we know that when kids experience abuse and neglect within those first 18 years, that is part of the adverse childhood experiences served survey and what their experience is. That leads to some short and long-term consequences, not only for that individual, but for us as a community and a society. And those long-term, mainly health consequences, mm-hmm. are both physical and mental health consequences. It can be leading to lower work production, missed days at work, increased need of supplemental insurance like a Medicaid, Medicare, in different areas. So there's a big impact to us as taxpayers of a societal
impact.
Of
those children that experience mm-hmm. that and what happens
and
as
what
they
happens.
Become adults.
Yes.
Is this a public health issue for UnitedHealthcare as well, something your team deals with regularly?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, when we have families that aren't meeting their full health potential and they're showing up in emergency rooms or they're showing up in behavioral health crisis yep. or they're showing up at an institution, that's a missed gap. That's a missed opportunity. And so for us, if we can figure out two things, A, how to support the family members and support parents. But second, getting back to this notion of the children's brains are so malleable that it's not just set in stone. Like, how do we make sure that we're interjecting treatment, access to professional treatment, but also the social services around there so that as kids get older, we're able to maybe address some of those adverse childhood experiences and ideally prevent the next generation from having as many as maybe their moms and dads did. So it is a bigger issue than just a healthcare issue. It's a societal opportunity that we all need to lean in on.
Rebecca, I mentioned at the top of the show you have had this shift, not just child abuse and neglect prevention, but family strengthening. What does family strengthening mean, and why was that change important?
Yeah, so it's never just been about the prevention of abuse and neglect, right? There's many people who can live in a household where there isn't that safe, stable, nurturing environment. That doesn't mean abuse and neglect happen, but are we helping kids reach that full potential? And that's really the shift and the difference, is that when we get to family strengthening, we are thinking about that safe, stable, nurturing environment that includes that caring relationship between those caregivers, parents, grandparents, but also thinking about the community conditions in which a family is set up to actually thrive.
Okay, so that shift to family strengthening is not new, or has there been a shift over the last several years that's different?
There's been an intentional shift over the last couple of years around April. So April nationally is known as Child Abuse Neglect Prevention Month, and many places still call it that. We, with a small group of other states that started this, we worked with them. Are we okay if we steal this from you? Because so often when we would do a press release in April, we would get the media call, could you find us a parent who used to abuse their kids and now things are better to have the interview? Well, let's stop focusing on the negative and really start thinking about what do Wisconsin families need? And that intentional shift led us to having some different partners reach out to us. There's a lot of fire departments who post our social media. Oh, it's April, it's Family Strengthening Month. Come in and get your car seat checked. Come get your batteries. It's a different message. It's a more warm, welcoming, and
positive
message.
versus negative,
right?
And punitive.
Yeah.
Before the show, you shared with me an article that talked about how parents learn about parenting, how that's really changed over the last several decades. Can you help us understand what do you mean? What does that look like? What has the change been?
Yeah. So there's some aspects of parenting that have always been there, right? We learn from how we were parented, and for many decades, families lived closer in more of a community. So not only from your own parents, but your aunts and uncles may live close, your grandparents, you had larger families also. So some of the older kids were also learning how to parent their younger kids on some level, right? The shifting of our demographics and the accessibility to live wherever in the U.S. also changes your ties and how close you may be to the family. And also families have gotten smaller in context too. There's less cousins, there's less siblings in a household. So learning how to parent, there are and there have always been opportunities, right? For many decades, public health nurses came out to doors and knocked on doors when a new baby arrived. But in a family resource center, it really is just a holistic approach to working with families. So there's another area to learn. also parenting changes. For many of us who have kids that are in their late adolescence, social media came about, the smartphones. That changed cyberbullying. Our parents
Nobody
didn't have
has
to,
an instruction manual
right?
on that.
Right. Yeah. Nobody had to think about cyberbullying until then and social media and how it impacted the brain of our kids during those really formative years. So parenting also continues to change. So we do need some different areas where parents don't feel shamed and can go and ask some questions.
Kevin, how does lack of parenting support show up in health outcomes for the people that UnitedHealthcare serves?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. And I would say it's not just the lack of parenting support, but it's also kind of demographically some of the barriers that are causing disparities. So you definitely see them, particularly for mothers. You know, we see early-term, preterm births, increased NICU stays. Obviously, that's on the front end of things. But then, as like I said before, as we move through and as the child becomes one and two and three, there's some natural touch points that child needs to get through, either developmentally or clinically. And we're starting to see challenges. And the biggest issue, I think, getting back to something that Rebecca said, is just engaging with people. You know, after the baby's born and after they're home and hopefully stable, a lot of times it's very difficult to get engaged with them to be able to make sure either clinically that they have the resources that they need, but also getting back to the child abuse versus strengthening families, it's a very different dynamic because nobody wants to admit that they may be at risk. Everybody wants to be part of a nurturing family. So for us, I think it's really about how do we make sure clinically that we're checking the boxes, but also it's part of a larger game plan, I would say. We want moms and kiddos to be healthy in year one, year two, year three, but also thinking about the long-term impact. Can we have an impact on education? Can we have an impact on reducing juvenile justice, reducing other areas that we know have the adverse impact when you have kids with multiple ACEs coming from parents with multiple ACEs? So it's a different approach from what you'd think of healthcare, but we're thinking about healthcare from an individual and a community perspective, and that's why we're so excited about the partnership and the willingness to collaborate.
Well, let's dig into that partnership a little bit. I know that a significant amount of the board's funding goes to these things called family resource centers. You both have mentioned family resource centers. There are many of them around the state. We're going to show a map of where they're located. Can you tell us what is a family resource center and where are they?
Yeah, so family resource centers, again, have been around for a long time, but they're really community-focused. It's a community organization that has that holistic approach to families. So if a parent, a grandparent comes in, right, they're meted, they're greeted, they provide parenting supports, but they also offer concrete supports. So part of this relationship, where can families go get diapers? Mm-hmm. Where can they get a car seat? Mm-hmm. Where can they get their car seat checked? Formula, different
That can
things.
Happen at a family resource
that
center?
That family happens at a lot of family resource centers. Our family resource center in the La Crosse County, 5,000 diapers a week they're handing out. And they get those through a lot of donations and different partnerships. But that's a light touch to come in. What else can family resource centers do? They can work with families if they're concerned about their kids not hitting milestones, right? Mm-hmm. Ooh, I think my two-year-old's supposed to talk, right? My other child was walking at this time. And those are conversations to have with your medical provider, and they're also places that within the context of meeting other parents and going to a parenting support class, you can work through some of those too. So that's really what they are. They're there, they're in the community, so they do all look a little bit different because they have parents helping them make some decisions. What programs are going to work best here?
Tailoring to that
yes.
community's
yep.
needs. Tell me about the UnitedHealthcare partnership with NFRC in Milwaukee area.
Yeah, so really great. So first, it all started because I'm a former board member.
Of the prevention board with Rebecca.
Yep, mm-hmm. so I knew the services, and I was actually on the grants committee way back in the day, and I knew the work that they were doing, and so we had actually connected, and I wanted to bring my clinical team on site at an FRC in Milwaukee, and there was actually a group of family resource centers that joined us, and they literally just walked down the different things that they were doing. And I saw my team just light up. They were like, wait a minute.
These are the things that are missing.
These are things that they're hearing from their members when they're talking to them, that maybe we don't have a clinical intervention, but they didn't know where to go with them. And so what we did is we did kind of two things. We'll talk a little bit about how do we incorporate all of the different family resource centers into what we do, so that when people do have a question or we do have an opportunity to make a referral, we can make that referral very quickly. But the second part was, is really with Bayview, is we found an opportunity where they were looking to expand some of their community-based services, things that were maybe a little bit outside of the norm of what they wanted to do. One of my favorite things is it had to do with just the role of family meals, and it's a pizza kit that they pulled together. But just understanding that when parents and kids are together making a pizza, whether it be a good pizza or a not so good pizza, that process is a bonding opportunity. And so we supplied not only dollars for the kits, but also dollars to help with other things. We talked a lot about barriers, but for us, barriers to food and transportation, so bus vouchers and groceries, because if you're hungry or you can't get somewhere, really makes it difficult for you to really engage and be present with your child or making a pizza in this particular case. So while we talk a lot about big, you know, huge things, at the end of the day, it's a very micro tactical thing of just spending time with your kid on something that's just everyday basic. It's great for the kid. It's also great for the parent too. So we're really excited to see what comes out of this particular partnership. But for us, the best part about it was it's really driven by the Family Resource Center. It was their vision.
How has that partnership with UnitedHealthcare in that particular part of Wisconsin been helpful?
Oh, I think it's been incredibly helpful, because I do think, like, this particular Family Resource Center, they were looking for, you know, they had some gaps, you know, thinking, like, because they have a food pantry, they have a diaper bank, but there's other ways in which that they could partner within the community. There's been about 30 referrals.
I got an updated number. Oh. We're over 70 now.
Oh, okay, 70 yep. referrals.
Yep. From UnitedHealthcare yep. enrollees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for the family resource centers that are receiving them, that family may be coming in maybe for the diapers or the car seat, you know, their transportation vouchers,
yep.
but they're staying. They're finding that when they...
Parenting support,
that child development. So Kevin brings up the pizza. A big part of family resource centers are playgroups, which seems this kind of fun thing, right? You learn to play with your kid. That seems like something most of us parents know how to do. But we build those playgroups around that dyadic, that mm-hmm. nurturing relationship, because it's not about the quantity of time you spend with your kids. It is about the quality of time that you spend with your kids, and really around rhythm, music, literacy, and build that time. Who's going to say no to that if it fits within your schedule?
It's an enriching experience.
It's an enriching experience.
I know you mentioned a little bit this new referral process or yep. enhanced referral process. So yep. these are your clinicians or care managers that are talking to somebody who has a health concern, mm-hmm. but you are referring them to non-health sorts of resources?
Yeah. So we have been doing this for a while. We'll do a screen for a social driver of health, food, transportation, housing. Those are the normal ones that we would do, and there's an engine that we have. And so if somebody screens positive for food insecurity, we want to refer them. We'll first make sure they're on SNAP or they're on WIC. Second thing is refer them to a food bank. What we did that's different, though, is we're ingesting all of the family resource centers into the engine as well, so that when one of our care managers, our program's called Healthy First Steps. So when they're sitting there talking to a mom, talking to a family, and they start to identify some of these issues that may not be clinical in nature or maybe a social driver of health, we can refer them to a food bank and also make the referral to a family resource center. And we've got them all of the family resource centers across the state
are in our referral network.
And so we're really eager to see not only those referrals, but what are those stories? One of the anecdotes that we just had recently was we made a referral to a family resource center, and the parent had trouble with getting childcare. Family Resource Center made the connection. They got child care. The benefit, there's a macro benefit here too, and I think it's important, is because we know that for a lot of our families, there's a distrust in the medical system. There's a distrust in the healthcare system. But when it comes to community-based partners, there's a much better tie-in for a lot of vulnerable families to know, well, wait a minute here. They've got food. They've got the playground is fantastic. They've got different resources. So there is a connection there that then allows people to realize, wait, this system is much more in support of what I need for my kid and for me versus, wait, I don't trust this system, I trust that. And I think that's really important for us to continue that conversation and evolve those collaborations.
I know you have your anecdotal evidence of how successful this is. Mm-hmm. The body of research is positive and developing around family resource centers and parenting supports overall. In Wisconsin, there's this growing correlation between increasing efforts of all agencies and recent abuse and neglect data. The data that we're showing on the screen is from the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families' most recent annual Wisconsin Child Abuse and Neglect Report. DCF notes Child Protective Services referrals have decreased by 21% in the past 5 years. They also say substantiations of neglect have decreased 25% from 2018 to 2022. They report this is a sign of overall prevention and early intervention systems, and that how they're better supporting children and families in the community. Rebecca, what kind of evidence do you have, or what are you hearing from families about the board's investments and their success?
Yeah, well, I would say one thing that we definitely heard from families the last budget cycle was they came out. They came out and helped us, and they advocated for more money in the family resource centers.
These families who you're serving,
yes,
were telling their stories?
And especially with that parent leadership on each of the family resource centers as part of it. They were at joint finance committee meetings on the budget. They were coming up to the Capitol. So they really enjoy this investment, but it is also serving them. Right? We are seeing, and especially when the family resource centers have those pieces already in it. We know evidence-based home visiting works. We know positive parenting program, triple P, works. So when you've got those pieces in there that already work, they're reaping the benefits of that. And they're our best spokesperson. And they were contacting their legislators and joint finance.
Learning that advocacy piece as well.
Yeah.
I know you have a recent strong and stable families survey, and you just released the results. What did that show you so far?
Yeah, so phase one of strong and stable surveys is just going to add to the research that's already out there about family resource centers, but again, specifically here in Wisconsin. And part of that is we have these pieces that go in family resource centers, but they're so community focused. How do you really evaluate them? So this was over 600 families that participated in family resource centers, asking them about family functioning. What's their motivation to go to a family resource center? What did they receive from services there? What else are they still looking for? And then 1,500 other families within Wisconsin that we got through a marketing firm, right? They had to have a child.
Like a control group.
Yep, a control group to really kind of look at that. So we're definitely seeing the family resource centers serve a diverse group of families, both social, economic, education level, race and ethnicity, like just much different than the general population, and that they're going there to learn about parenting. But there's still gaps. They would like to learn some financial information and some budgeting, and also more connections out to the resources.
That builds your plan for the future. Rebecca, I know you mentioned you have 20 members on your board. This is all delineated in your statute. State agency representatives, public members. You also have a bipartisan group of legislators that are appointed by the leadership in the legislature. Have you found Republicans and Democrats look at this issue differently?
They potentially look at this pieces of it differently, but there's nothing more bipartisan than our children and families. I think, you know, government and politicians, we want strong families. Having strong families helps our economy in Wisconsin. It helps the future workforce and the current workforce. So it's really, it is a bipartisan issue.
So those legislators come to the table and they get that?
Yes, very much so.
Kevin, we didn't mention this in the introduction, but your former Medicaid director here in Wisconsin in the Governor Walker administration at the Department of Health Services, you were also, you mentioned, an appointee to this board. What is the best way to talk about child abuse prevention in a bipartisan sort of a way?
Yeah, I think, honestly, it's first of all, it's just the language. The language does matter. The narrative matters. We want stronger, we want healthier families, which is first and foremost. I also think it's something, I use my own example. When my daughter came home, I was thinking about it when I drove 25 from the hospital to the house, even though I was in a 55-mile-an-hour zone, I've gotten better at that. But, you know, thinking when you get home, and you had mentioned this before, there's no owner's manual. And for my family, we had the ability, especially that first week, we didn't know what was going on. We actually were able to bring a doula into the house to be able to provide additional support for me and my wife because we didn't know what was going on. When you start to think about families that don't have the resources that my family had, and that was really a deciding factor of why I got so involved, not only in the board, but also I'm on Prevent Child Abuse America's national board right now. All of this kind of spins this same notion that it doesn't really matter where you are. It's a challenging time when your little one is up in the middle of the night, you're tired, you're trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. And when you add to it some of the pressures of you don't know where your next meal is, you don't know if you're gonna be kicked out of your home, you don't know if you're gonna have a job, it's a bigger issue than just that immediate family. And as I think about this concept of what's the return on investment, yes, we're gonna continue to evaluate interventions. You know, nursing home visitation obviously is one that does have a positive financial ROI, but we also have to broaden the aperture a little bit wider. We have to think about this not just in terms of from birth to one or birth to two. This is about a generation of making sure that we're preventing adverse childhood experiences from transcending generation to generation, because those kiddos, they need that support, and those parents need that support as well. So it's incredibly important topic, and it's something that I'm just really proud that we're being catalytic in the work that we're doing together.
Rebecca, part of the board's charge is to make policy recommendations to the governor and the legislature. Are there some policy changes or investments that are on your wish list that could help continue this work?
Yeah, I mean, so we will ask the board again about if they will let us present in the budget some more money for family resource centers. We do have them in a big part of the state, but there's still gaps in parts of the state.
You had $1 million allocation in the last biennial budget to go towards some of this work.
Yep, exactly. So that will be on there. But really, some of the policy work is really building off of the community and the partnerships. One thing we say about families, you rarely do this alone, right? No matter what your family structure is. You may have grandma come and help, right? You may have a doula come and help. So we can't do this work alone. It is really on that level of the community of working across child care centers. That's where a lot of families go. And regulated child care means after school care for those older kiddos, right? The middle school kiddos, because of COVID, we're seeing a really big increase in challenging behavior. So we need some help there. So it's really about that local policy of how we partner and collaborate, something like that we're doing with United Healthcare. In the idea, too, that we don't want to only focus on certain families, because that brings in some stigma. This really is a universal parenting experience, is challenging at different times. And when we make it less shameful for anyone to ask for help, it makes it easier for everyone to ask for some help. Yeah.
Kevin, Medicaid, not known for being a very flexible program. Are there ways that Medicaid could work better if you were able to redesign some of those policies that could help in this family strengthening work?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, there's some bigger policy issues that I know have been out there for a while. 12-month postpartum is obviously an important issue, because making sure that the family stays together on Medicaid from birth all the way through 1 year, that's one thing. Doula's coverage is another thing. But I think those are just tools in the toolbox for a care manager. I think it's continuing. Obviously, Medicaid managed care in Wisconsin has been around for a long time. It's allowing us to be flexible about having these types of partnerships with community-based organizations, thinking outside the box other than just the clinical intervention, because we want that, right? Like, we want to hit those clinical metrics. We want to hit everything, early periodic screening, EPSDT, I can't remember what it all stands for. We want to hit those measures, but we also recognize that there's an opportunity and obligation to go a little bit further than that. So I think Medicaid in Wisconsin is prime for it. The other part I think we talked a little bit about, but social drivers of health, is that as I look at parenting and I look at family supports, that also needs to be in tandem with making sure that all of these other social drivers, that there's an opportunity to address them, not just making referrals. We do that a lot currently, whether it be to food banks or whether it be to housing supports. And Medicaid, while it's not always flexible, Wisconsin Medicaid is really moving forward and making sure that Medicaid is supporting more of those services and supports. Now it's about coordinating them, because now if you are a family and you've got all of this great stuff around you, but you don't know where to start, you're not going to be able to really maximize the benefit of it. And I think that's where I look at the over 80 people in my health plan that are on the phones and in the communities working with folks. They're the ones that are putting all of these pieces together. Social workers at the county, they're putting all of these pieces together. So there's a the money part and there's policy stuff, but ultimately it's about making sure that we're all talking together on behalf of and the best interest of the family.
And policy can't always coordinate that. It has to kind of happen on its own.
Correct. Correct.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us and sharing more about your work.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.